Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of what's overhead during November. Well, we're finally getting back on standard time. This changeover, with clocks falling back an hour, takes place before dawn on November 1st in the U.S. and Canada. Honestly, I think this back-and-forth switching is confusing, and it's getting even more so. The switch happens a week earlier in Europe. Down under, our Australian friends move to summertime in early October. Tropical countries don't make the change at all, nor does China or Russia. Anyway, the return to standard time means that most of us are still heading home from work as the evening twilight sets in. Now that's just fine with me, thanks very much, because it means I can sneak in a little stargazing before dinner time. Once the sky gets dark, keep an eye out for shooting stars from a meteor shower known as the Taurids. These are bits of debris shed by a periodic comet called Encke. You might see them any time from mid-October to late November. Usually they're few and far between, at most a few per hour from dusk to dawn. But many of them create spectacular fireballs. In fact, this year there's a chance you'll see a fair number of fireballs throughout the first week of November. You can catch a second meteor shower this month, the Leonids, late on the night of November 17th. It's usually a fairly weak shower too, but you might see a handful of shooting stars in the hours after midnight. Meanwhile, as was the case last month, you'll have a chance to see great planet action during November. But there's a catch. You'll have to get up before dawn to see it. Early in the month, the bright planet Jupiter rises in the east before 3 a.m., followed about a half an hour later by even brighter Venus and somewhat dimmer Mars. Last month, Mars nuzzled close to Jupiter, and this month its partner is Venus. The two planets shine within 1 degree of each other from November 2nd to the 5th, but Venus is much, much brighter than its celestial partner. Watch for a thin crescent moon entering the scene, pairing closely with Jupiter before dawn on the 6th, and with Venus and Mars on the 7th. Just beautiful. Then all three planets start spreading out, and by month's end, they span roughly 30 degrees. That's three times the width of your fist held at arm's length. With all that activity before dawn, will there be anything worth seeing in the evening sky? You bet. After it gets dark, and of course that happens sooner now, look high in the southeast for a giant diamond in the sky that's about the size of your hand with your fingers spread wide apart. Sky watchers the world over know this as the Great Square, representing the chest of Pegasus, the flying horse. Now, the square itself is easy enough to see, but you might have trouble visualizing it as part of a horse. For one thing, the horse is flying upside down. Another thing is that the constellation doesn't represent a complete animal, just the front half. The front legs of Pegasus extend from the top star toward upper right. Its neck and head stretch out and up from the diamond's right corner. Now, there are a couple of strings of stars stretching leftward from the big square, and those do seem like hind legs to me. But technically, they all belong to the constellation of Andromeda, a chained princess in Greek mythology. Throughout the night, Pegasus flies higher in the sky and gets flipped over even more on its back. If your skies are reasonably dark, you should be able to make out the Circlet of Pisces, a lovely little pentagon of stars hanging directly under the Great Square. And you can look past the nose of Pegasus to the right to reach Delphinus, the dolphin, my wife's favorite constellation. Like the circlet, Delphinus is fairly faint, but if you can see it at all, it's sure to catch your eye, a tiny diamond of stars with a tail extending down and to the right. Return to the Great Square for a moment and focus on the two stars on its left side. Follow an imaginary line downward from them, about 4 or 5 fists away, until you come to a bright star all on its own above the southern horizon. That's Fomalhaut, the brightest star in the constellation Pisces Astrinus, the southern fish. In fact, Fomalhaut derives from the Arabic words for mouth of the fish. This solitary sparkler is the only really obvious star in this entire stretch of sky. Fomalhaut is fairly close as stars go, only 25 light-years away, and astronomers have been paying it a lot of attention recently. It looks like a single point of light, but it's actually a double or binary star. and astronomers have recently realized that it's actually a triple star. Fomalhaut is also fairly young, and it's surrounded by a dusty disk of debris. Oh, there's a planet going around it too. Quite a lot going on there. Around mid-November at 7 p.m., note what's below Fomalhaut along your horizon. That direction is due south. Now do an about-face to look due north, and you'll find Polaris, the north star, roughly halfway from the horizon to overhead. Don't expect to be dazzled by Polaris. It's only half as bright as Fomalhaut. Before you call it a night, take a moment to look straight up. Around 10 p.m. early in November, 9 at mid-month, and 8 at the end of the month. If your sky is good and dark, and there's no bright moon about, you just might make out a faint, fuzzy glow. That's the Andromeda Galaxy, a near twin of our Milky Way. It's 2.5 million light-years away, the most distant object that you can see with your unaided eye. It's also headed our way at about 70 miles per second. These two behemoth star cities will collide in about 4 billion years. Our solar system will still be around then, but you and I surely won't. For other great sky watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, we'll explore how a bunch of maidens got involved with an angry bull. Until then, I wish you clear skies.